Not just for the book season, but for all retailers, the holidays bring expectations of a high order. We'll be talking about that and other retail-related stories today. Welcome, everyone, to our special Friday feature in CCC's podcast series. My name is Chris Keneally. Each week, CCC's Beyond the Book speaks with the editors and reporters of Publishers Weekly for an early look at the news that everyone will be talking about when you get back to work on Monday. Joining me, as always, on the show is Andrew Albanese, PW's Features Editor. Andrew, welcome back.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, nice to have you back here before we take a little bit of a break ourselves for the holiday week next week, Thanksgiving, and all that turkey is coming, and once everybody's pulled away from the table, they head off to the stores, or at least that's what retailers hope. You're covering some of the expectations that the book business has for this season.
That's right. So, you know, before the last turkey sandwiches are packed away next week, consumers will begin lining up at malls all around the country for Black Friday deals. So this week, I attended the Association for Corporate Growth's second annual retail conference at the New York Athletic Club here in Manhattan, and I got a little info on what to expect for this year's holiday sales season. Now, as any bookseller will tell you, this is the make or break season. So short and sweet, flat is the new up. And despite the lowest levels of consumer confidence since 1980, as one analyst noted, this year's holiday selling season is expected to be flat and maybe up a little over last year. So that's good news, we think. Now, long term, the analysts all agree that the housing market is still impacting consumer confidence, and there's just really not much we're going to be able to do about that for now. And in the short term, things like gas and food prices can still hit hard this holiday season. But all in all, I think we're looking at a fairly predictable holiday season in terms of consumer spending. But with this note, right after Black Friday is Cyber Monday. Now, Cyber Monday is the online Black Friday without the risk of, you know, being trampled at a mall entrance. And of the 3% uptick in sales most analysts are calling for this holiday season, one analyst suggested that as many as 2 of those 3 points could come from online sales. Now, that's really no surprise to any of us who have been watching this, but it's yet another reminder to retailers that in order to get people off their couches and into their stores, it's going to require some new thinking and a better consumer experience.
Well, also at that event there at the Association for Corporate Growth's that retail conference, you were able to talk to a special guest, the former CEO for Borders. And I guess my thought is at such an event, he might not be an entirely welcome sort.
Well, yeah, former Borders CEO Mike Edwards, who is a 30-year veteran of the retail market and is highly regarded for, you know, his past work, was interviewed for the keynote at the conference. And he gave what I must say was a refreshingly candid assessment of what happened with Borders. Now, Edwards was only at Borders for, I think, less than 2 years, maybe just about 2 years. But he had the task of presiding over its bankruptcy at the end, though he really did nothing to cause it. But he was asked about Borders' fatal mistakes, and Edwards pointed out a few things. The first was Borders going across borders. There was an international expansion in the late 90s that he said drained cash and distracted officials from the U.S. business. There was also a stock buyback at around $30 a share, I think, that was announced in 2005. Now, at the time, Wall Street loved that move, but analysts at the time said that it might kill the company, and indeed they were right. Edwards suggested that an additional $300 million that was drained out of the company by that stock buyback might have made a big difference on the balance sheet. But perhaps Borders' most crucial strategic blunder, Edwards suggested, was that the company didn't take the internet seriously enough in its early days and initially outsourced its online business to Amazon.com, virtually handed its customer base to Amazon.com, Edwards said. So at that point, Randy Schwimmer, who did the interview for the keynote, seized the moment to talk about the cultural shift to ebooks. And he asked the audience how many people had downloaded a book in the last month. And to my surprise, nearly the entire room raised their hands. So then he asked how many people had actually purchased a book at a bookstore in the same period. And once again, a vast majority of hands went up. And this suggested to Schwimmer that, hey, you know, maybe ebooks and print books are not mutually exclusive and there's going to be room for both. And I think that's true in a lot of ways. And Edwards also agreed. But then he began to outline some of the challenges facing the physical book retailers, chiefly this. As a percentage of book sales transition to ebook sales, what do bookstores do with their extra square feet? You know, if half of your books are going to be sold online, you don't need half your store, possibly. So what happens to that space? And also, how do brick and mortars brick and mortar stores that have operating costs compete with Amazon, which, you know, has none of those costs. So, you know, Edwards recalled his most recent buying experience with a television at Best Buy. You know, he went to the store, found the model he wanted, pulled out his iPhone, quickly found a cheaper price online with free shipping, and then presented that option to the store and said, "Hey, can you match the price?" They said no. They lost the sale. Edwards said this was a challenge at Borders, and that he called these customers cheaters, playfully, I'll add, because these are the customers that would come to the store, browse books, read them, have a cup of coffee, and then pull out their phones and use the free Wi-Fi to buy the book more cheaply from Amazon. So the talk for me raised a lot of interesting points. You know, not just about Borders and what caused this demise, but, you know, this is the first holiday season now without a Borders. So I'm really curious to see what this does for the sales of local indie stores in communities where Border stores were closed. And also, I'm curious to see what this does for online book sales. As you well know, there's going to be a lot of new devices under the Christmas trees this year.
Right. And, you know, I think you make a great point, and we'll be looking to get an answer from you as to how independent bookstores do fare in a world without Borders. I have to say, I think it is, as you pointed out, refreshing to have Mike Edwards come up there and be as honest as it sounds he was, although I noted that most of the problems he accounted for in its demise were things that happened long before he arrived. So he kind of tried to say that it was all baked in. It couldn't possibly have survived.
And pretty much that was the case. And it was funny. He said, you know, when he became interim CEO in January of 2010 and full-time CEO in June of 2010, you know, his marching orders were immediately to raise $130 million immediately, right now, or the company went under. And that wasn't in the brochure, he quipped.
And if it had been, he might have taken something else. Well, you ended with Amazon, and we're always talking about Amazon one way or another. The Kindle Fires have arrived in the stores, and your colleague has a review. I read it. I thought he made some great points. Tell us briefly about that.
Yeah, Craig, our Craig Teicher, who's our tech editor and who runs our website here at PW, is really interested in the tablet stuff. And the Kindle Fire came, and he immediately set to reviewing it. Now, his review, basically, you can look at it. It's on the PW site, and we'd love to have your feedback, too, is that it's no iPad, but then it doesn't have to be. For what it is, he thinks it's, you know, pretty much perfectly fine. And it bodes pretty well for an exciting future in the tablet market. And today, I might add, I believe November's early this week, at least, the Nook tablets are also shipping. So next week, we should have even a little more on the tablet stuff.
Well, anything else to cover this week?
Yeah, elsewhere in the magazine, we're going to have a short feature on mysteries and a longer piece on the role that publishing master's programs are playing in developing the next generation of publishing professionals. You know, schools like NYU and Emerson and Rosemont, Portland State. And in the news section, we're taking a look at the future of regional fall trade shows as these regional associations are coming under increasing pressure. And of course, author photos. We're going to have pictures of the National Book Awards.
Well, you know, I was out in Portland a few years ago for a Pub West conference and met some of the people involved with the Portland State program. It's a really remarkable program in a place you wouldn't expect to find it. Well, thank you, Andrew Albanese, PW Features Editor. And let's turn now, as we do every week, to Rose Fox, a PW Reviews Editor who blogs at Jean Reville, and she brings us news of what's in the reviews this week. Rose, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Always good to be here.
What do we see in fiction this week?
In fiction, we have a Q&A with Steph Penny, who talks about The Invisible Ones, which is her novel about the travelers, England's Romany Gypsy population. We also highlight our review of The Good Father by Noah Hawley, in which an accused murderer's father tries to make sense of the crime, and The Mirage by Matt Ruff, who posits an alternate 2009 where a union of benevolent Muslim states guards against Christian fundamentalist terrorists. In Mystery and Thriller, we have another Q&A with television producers Neil Baer and Jonathan Green, who just made their fiction debut with Kill Switch. We've got strong reviews of some popular mystery series installments. We have Val McDermott's The Retribution, Matthew Riley's Scarecrow Returns, and T. Jefferson Parker's The Jaguar. Series books are also big in other genres. In science fiction, fantasy, and horror, we cover Michael Flynn's In the Lion's Mouth, which is his powerful and poetic third tale of far future humanity. And in romance, we have what I believe is our first review of a digital first title, Chain Reaction by Zoe Archer, her second science fiction romance featuring the space pilots of the Eighth Wing. In nonfiction, we interview journalist Blaine Harden, whose book Escape from Camp 14 tells the dramatic story of a man who was born and raised in a North Korean labor camp and eventually escaped to the West. We also review two intriguing memoirs, Mr. CSI by Anthony Zucker with Todd Gold, which explains how Zucker created the CSI franchise, and Fairy Tale Interrupted, in which Rose Marie Terencio talks about working with John F. Kennedy Jr. when he founded a political magazine.
Well, I understand your life section well. Comment je peux le dire, c'est très français cette semaine. It's going to be very French this week.
Yes, in lifestyles, we have Michel Zuccolone's The French Slow Cooker, which puts a sophisticated spin on comfort food, and The Art of French Baking by Jeanette Mathieu, which provides an informative and accessible introduction to the realm of French pastry making. This week, we also have a children's religion and spirituality section, where we review Naomi Kinsman's Shades of Truth, which shows how Christian faith can play a role in a young person's journey of growing up. And in children's picture books, we review six advice, activity, and how-to books for inquiring young minds. We also single out Question Boy Meets Little Miss Know-It-All by Peter Catalanotto, set in a surreal suburbia where everyone is a superhero. And in middle grade and young adult fiction, we review The Lions of Little Rock by Kristen Levine, a dynamic portrait of 1958 Little Rock, Arkansas, where the school integration debates are made very personal when a young white girl learns that her best friend is only passing as white.
Well, Rose Fox, as always, thank you for that wrap-up of this week's reviews. And Andrew Albanese, features editor for Publishers Weekly, thanks for your take on the latest news.
Pleasure as always.
Looking forward to Thanksgiving with the family and friends. And next week, we will not be having our regular Friday feature, PW's Week Ahead. We will be back the following week. So to everyone in our audience, we wish you a very happy holiday and safe travels. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.